Welcome to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham. If you have a comment, email it to me, box13 at greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/radiodetectives. Well, today our listener support campaign continues. You can support the show on a one-time basis at support.greatdetectives.net. But today's focus is on our Patreon supporters. And by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.greatdetectives.net, you send a small recurring monthly donation, can be anywhere from $2 to $30 per month. And there are levels for each point of support. The $2 is our rookie level. $4 is our shamus level. $7.14 is the detective sergeant level. And of course, that level's not chosen random amount because $7.14, badge number 714. $15 is our master detectives level, and $30 is our chief of detectives level. Now, there are rewards at each level. We're working on retooling them, and we'll tell you more about that as we work on that in coming days. But one thing with being one of our Patreon supporters is that you really are connected to a lot of stuff we're doing on the show. Patreon supporters often learn of different things we're going to do on the show before the general listeners. For example, I sent out a Patreon newsletter in July announcing the new series that we're going to be doing. And I send one of those out about every month with a little bit of a personal update, some of what we're planning on the show, and just a general update. Patreon supporters often consulted on things such as listener support specials. If I'm kind of open about what we're going to do. And part of the reason for that is the Patreon support is really just such a real vital part of making the program work. It used to be that I just did the listener support campaigns, and I'd mentioned throughout the year that you could send donations. And what happened, there was a real pattern with the cash flow into the show. We would have a huge rush of donations, relatively, during our listener support campaign. But then we would also have some really dry months. I think April through July, there would be almost no funds into the program. But with the Patreon support, we have a fairly reliable stream coming into the show. It really does help immensely, and I appreciate all of our Patreon supporters. And if you'd like to join them, go to patreon.greatdetectives.net. Now, we also do have some milestone goals. I'll talk about the one that's upcoming once we go ahead and listen to today's episode. Today's episode is That Hammer Guy. The original air date, April the 27th, 1954, and this one is Dead Dame in Central Park.
And now, here's Ted DeCorsia in the Keith Verlaine mystery, That Hammer Guy. I'm not a poetic guy, at least you won't admit to it around the joints where you hang out. But come spring and the hardcore inside you starts to crack and melt away. And you find yourself rhyming June and moon. And like they say, in the springtime a guy's fancy turns to thoughts of lighter things. Right now your fancy is turning to the lightest thing in your life. Your girl Friday Zelda, who's the juiciest looking game to you any day of the week. You've got an hour to slaughter before your date with her and you amble through Central Park. You spot the couples in clinches, and you're hoping that the warm evening breeze will melt that final wall of resistance felt always high behind. You're walking along a dim-lit path, creating exciting fantasies in your mind when you hear the voice.
I beg your pardon.
The dame is sitting on a bench alone, almost hidden in a shadow. Her voice has a pleasant, tickling effect on your ears. Naturally, you're curious about the rest of it. You've got time, so you walk over to her.
My lighter's in a stubborn mood. Could you help me?
You strike a match and the light wipes away the shadows. You like what you see. You like it so much you gawk like a hick kid who sees a sideshow dance act for the first time.
You'd better be careful.
Huh?
The match. You burn your fingers.
The match?
Oh, the match.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Anything? Nice time.
Very.
You, waiting for somebody? Okay, it's none of my business.
No, I'm not waiting for anyone. Why?
Some kind of a funny place for a dame like you to be alone. I guess that's none of my business either.
I'm not a dame.
Well, just an expression I use loosely.
Maybe you'd better tighten up your vocabulary.
I'll take that under advisement.
I'm sorry, I had no right to be so nasty.
Everybody should be that nasty with me.
I came to the park because I like it here.
Protective coloration, huh?
I beg your pardon?
The black dress you're wearing and sitting here in the shadows. Protective coloration. I learned about it in biology once. Animals use it to hide from other animals of prey.
I have nothing to hide.
This, I can see.
Thanks again for the light.
Glad to meet you. Now, so long.
Oh, wait.
Yeah?
You don't have to go if you don't want to.
Well, I wasn't really.
You're pretty sure of yourself, aren't you?
Well, I've been known to make mistakes.
Well, it might be a big one.
I'll take my chances.
A gambler?
When the odds are right.
I like you. You're direct. My name is Marcia Bowman.
I like you. But you're not direct.
I know what you mean.
I mean, you're lying.
What?
About your name.
What are you talking about?
Your last name. It's not Bowen.
No? Then what is it?
You tell me.
Just what sort of a game is this? Well,
suppose you tell me that, too.
Now, excuse
me. Look,
I'm
no cop. I'm not going to blow the whistle on you.
You think that...
When I lit your cigarette, I saw the monogram on your bag. The initials were M.J., and Bowman doesn't begin with J, even on a loose vocabulary, does it?
I'm sorry I was nice to you.
No, you're not. You want me here with you. That's the idea, isn't it?
Where did you get that silly idea?
You want me here because you're in some kind of a jam.
Oh, ridiculous. You don't know what you're talking about.
You know I do. Why are you sitting here in the dark? Why'd you give me that phony name?
That doesn't even seem...
Now, maybe this will.
Bad, you stand and go. You give that back to me, I'll scream.
Go ahead. Yell your head off.
You.
Yeah, here's what I was talking about. This gun. A .45 is kind of big to carry around in such a small purse. Or is that the latest Parisian style?
You give me that gun.
Maybe, after we talk.
You give it me or I'll get the police.
You do, and you'll have to show them a license. The cops are real fussy about things like that. Now, what about that talk?
It wouldn't interest you.
Try me and see.
All right, all right, but do you mind if I light another cigarette first?
Hold up another match for her. You see her hand shake like a Model T going over a rough road, and the muscles in her face draw tight. You flick out the match and wait for her to begin. But you don't even hear her get to the first word. Something blunt and heavy cracks into the back of your skull. The red flash of pain rips through you, and then you dissolve into black nothing. When you come to, you feel in your pocket for a match, and the first thing your hand touches is a gun, and the steel of it is as warm as light. After you light up the match, you see it's the same gun, the dame's .45, and two shells are missing from the clip. Then on the grass behind the bench, you see the dame herself, with two circles of blood despoiling the front of her dress. She's dead, all right, and in your hand is the gun that killed her. You start looking through her handbag when you hear footfalls echoing down the walk. You make him out as he passes under a lamp. It's a cop and he's in a hurry. The way things stack, you figure you've got as much chance if you stick around as a four-legged dame in a beauty contest. You get out of there in more of a hurry. Then you phone Velda from the base station.
Don't tell me who this is. Let me guess.
Look, Velda, there's a legit reason for my being late.
But of course, something in the way of business came up.
Yeah, the worst kind.
For you.
Will you give me a chance to explain?
Why bother?
Will you listen? I was walking across the park and I met this dame.
Just two ships that passed in the night.
Oh, thanks.
I just as soon spare myself the details if you don't mind.
It's nothing like you think. It was murder.
You're telling me.
Look, the dame is dead, shot to death, and it looks like I did it.
Mike, you're not kidding.
I'm not kidding. Now look, there's something you gotta do for me.
All right, Mike, anything. Anything.
You give Velda a fast rundown on what happened. Then you tell her to get in touch with your friend Captain Pat Chambers of Homicide, but not to let on to it.
I'll call Pat right away.
You've got to feel better after you hang up. You know Velda can handle Pat okay. You're in a tough spot, but you've got a dame on your side who can use her head for something else than the parking lot, perhaps. By the time you get to Velda's place, she's already talked to Pat. For a moment, you forget all about the jam. All you can think about is this appetizing dame, and you can't resist telling her.
Don't you know there's a time and place for everything?
We've got the place. And there's always time.
Oh, what am I going to do with you anyway?
Anything you want, and you know it.
Well, right now, I want you out of this mess. Mike, you never should have run away.
Well, I told you, Velda, the odds were stacked against me. I was a sitting pigeon.
You could have explained anything to Pat. He's your friend.
He's also a cop. And the way things were, he'd have been as official with me as that badge he wears. What else did Pat tell you?
Just what I told you.
Nothing on our identification?
They're making a fingerprint check.
You sure her first name is Marcia?
No, but it could be. And according to the monogram on that handbag, her last name began with a J.
No idea why she was killed.
I told you, I just met her.
Well, all right. You don't have to holler at me.
Would you act like you still don't believe me?
I want to, Mike.
You can.
It isn't going to be easy.
Believing me?
Finding the killer. There's nothing to go on.
Just one thing.
What?
I found this watch in her pocketbook when I yanked out the gun. It was the only other thing in there.
Women don't usually carry a watch like that.
Yeah, but men do. And there's this inscription on the inside.
To GN with a love from MJ, 1953. MJ, the girl's initials.
Yeah.
It's something, Mike.
Could be more. I can trace it to the store where it was bought.
Oh, wait.
What?
Something I forgot. Pat did say they had some chance of cracking the case. It's lucky you left that gun at the scene of the crime.
The serial number?
Mm-mm, no, the serial number was filed off.
Then?
They did find fingerprints on the gun. That should help.
Oh, yeah, great help. It'll help lead Pat right straight to me. 101, those prints on the gun are mine.
In just a moment, we'll return to the Mickey Spillane mystery, That Hammer Guy. To the Mickey Spillane mystery, That Hammer Guy. So you're off and running in another rat race, only this time it's yourself you're trying to keep out of the trap. And so far, the only thing that's going to keep it from closing on you is that man's watch you got out of the dead dame's handbag. You and Velda do a tracking job. 2 days later, you trace the watch to a jewelry store in Madison Avenue. And from there, the trail leads to the Elms, a roadhouse up in Westchester where the right connections will get you into the back room, where the suckers flirt with Lady Luck on the green felt card and dice table. It's 9:00 p.m. when you amble into the joint, and you're greeted by a bamboo blonde who looks like she just stepped down from the G.I. spin-up collection.
Hello.
The way she says that is intended to make you feel like you're the last guy on earth.
You're alone.
Hello.
I'm Dorothy Peters. Maybe I can help.
I wouldn't be surprised, Dorothy.
Well, I'm here to help, do what I can to lighten our patrons this evening.
And their pocketbooks, too?
Now, that is a crude remark.
Oh, I'm a crude guy.
Actually, I like a man who doesn't pull his punches.
Actually, I like a dame who can take it.
Oh, then we'll get along fine.
Only time will tell.
I have all evening.
I wish I did.
You know what haste makes.
Maybe we'll talk about the pros and cons of that later.
Well, there's a cozy table over there in the corner. Why not talk about it now?
Because right now, there's some talking I want to do with Ted Beckley, the character who runs this joint.
Oh, he's expecting you?
Mm-hmm.
But Ted's busy, I know.
Suppose you tell him I've got to see him anyway.
Well, you make it sound really important.
A murder is always kind of important, especially to the one who gets killed.
What's this all about?
Well, right now, Dorothy, that's between Beckley and me. And that door over there marked the private, that's Beckley's office.
Yeah, you come on. I'll take you to Taylor.
Beckley?
You wait here, please.
Hey, there's someone outside.
Who is it, Dorothy?
I don't know.
The name is Hammer, Beckley, Mike Hammer.
Who asked you in here? Can't you read a sign on the door says private, and that means strictly?
That's what I'm here about, Beckley, something strictly private.
He said it's something about murder to you.
You a cop?
I just keep this hat on because I didn't brush my hair this morning.
Come on, what are you?
A crude guy by nature, a private investigator by what they call profession.
What's this murder stuff about?
That's what I want to find out.
You don't talk sense.
I will.
Get back out front, Dorothy.
But
do what I tell you.
Well, all right, then.
Okay, Hammer, let's have it.
There was a killing a couple of nights ago in Central Park, a dame. So far, she hasn't been identified. I traced a man's watch she'd bought a year ago to a jewelry store. According to the store's record, that watch was mailed here to a George Norton. Know anything about Norton?
George used to be my partner.
The dame who bought the watch gave me the name of Marcia Jordan. Know anything about her?
Sure, Marcia used to work here. She was George's girlfriend before he took up with Dorothy.
The dame who brought me in here.
That's right.
You see Marcia Jordan lately?
No, not for 6 months. Not since that night it happened.
Since what happened?
Since that night George and Marcia went for that car ride. Since that night the Peekskill cop found George Norton in that car with 2 slugs in his head.
After you leave Beckley's joint, you drive up to Peekskill and check out his story with the local gendarme. Beckley fed it to you straight, all right down the line. Then you stop at a gin mill across the street and phone Velde in town.
But now that Marcia herself is dead, it could mean the police are wrong about her.
You know it could mean that. It could mean that she kept herself under wraps for 6 months to save her own skin.
What now, Mike?
What now? You feel as useless as a deep freeze in an igloo. You tell Velde you'll see her at the office in the morning.
All right, Mike, but take it easy, promise?
Velde knows you. She knows the frustration leads you to the bottle. You hang up, not making any empty promises. Then you go over to the bar and order a double bourbon.
Mind if I join you?
You tell the little guy with a mouthful of gleaming white choppers that you do mind.
To be alone, that is bad enough. To be alone and I'm happy, that is terrible.
Look, if I want my fortune told, I'll go to a gypsy zero.
I only try to be friendly.
I got enough friends.
And perhaps enemies too, huh?
Do you like that music?
Yeah, rumba. I put the money in a machine to play that. Yeah, rumba. My favorite. I always play that one. For 5 cents, you can recapture a memory. This song. One song can mean so much in your life.
Look, whatever your name is...
Carlos Gomez, and it's a pleasure to know you. That song, a sad memory. Even the moment I recapture it's not really mine. She was so beautiful, like a star. But she could never be mine. I danced with her only once to that song. I think inside she laughed at me. I was so nervous and so clumsy. But I didn't care if she laughed. I would have done anything for her. Anything she asked, no matter what she thought of me. Beautiful. Like a star. Can you understand what I mean?
Yeah, maybe I can, but what's the difference?
Oh, it is especially important that you understand.
Why me?
Because perhaps in a way you can do something for her, which I can.
Why should I do anything for her, whoever she is?
Because you will be doing it for yourself at the same time. She was Marcia Jordan.
What?
I follow you here. I overhear what you said at Beckley's place. I'm a waiter there. Waiter, but I'm a man, too. None of them, they don't know what a man I am. They don't know anything about me. Soon I will laugh at them. Out loud I will laugh.
The Jordan dame.
Every time I play that music, I close my eyes. I see myself dancing with her. That one dance. I see myself not clumsy and nervous the way I was, but elegant and graceful.
You said I could do something for myself.
And for her.
You mean about getting a killer?
Yes. Well, what is it? Tomorrow night I will have what you want. I am sure.
Well, what's the matter with tonight?
No. You will have to wait till tomorrow. There will be no mistake then. You can meet me.
You name the place and when, Gomez?
The side street around the corner. 10 o'clock. You step out of your car, I will come to you.
10 o'clock. All right. I'll be there.
Oh, she was like a star. So beautiful. But this time...
You go back to town, and all the next day you're haunted by Carlos Gomez's pathetic dream of love, his tragic devotion to a dame as far out of his reach as a star. You're at your place, getting set to drive up to Peekskill for your meeting with Gomez. Hello?
Is this Mike Hammer?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm glad I got to you before you left.
Who is this?
That's not important. I had to talk to you before you went up to meet Carlos Gomez.
Well, how did you know about
don't
that?
Don't ask any questions. Just listen to what I got to say to you. I just found out what Gomez is going to pull on you. He isn't going to give you what you're looking for.
Who told you I had an appointment with Gomez?
Please, will you just listen? You want to stay alive, don't you?
Yeah, I'm sure you're still have it now.
Well, you won't if you meet Gomez. Believe me, the minute you step out of your car to meet Gomez, you'll get the same as the others got. 2 bullets through you.
You got a good idea who made that call, but you're not checking back on her just yet. Now you're not sure what to expect, so you make ready for any kind of a twist. That warning, you figure, could have been a gimmick to sidetrack you, and then again, it could have been legitimate. So you get hold of Velda, and you two work out an emergency arrangement. You drive up to Peekskill to meet Carlos Gomez the way you set it up. The side street is as dark and deserted as a losing candidate's headquarters an hour after the election results are in. You're parked right in the middle of the block. You figure the car up ahead is Gomez. You wait a second and then open the door. It won't be long now till you find out just what Gomez's intentions are. You lift the dressmaker's dummy from the seat beside you and push it on the sidewalk. Gomez makes his intentions known just 1 second later.
In just a moment, we'll return to the Mickey Spillane mystery, That Hammer Guy. And now back to the Mickey Spillane mystery, That Hammer Guy.
Right after the shot split the air, Gomez's car starts up and fades into the night. You turn your coupe around and start back to town. All the way back, you keep thinking of those two neat round holes the thugs made in the dummy's head. You feel a lot better that they're not in your head. You're in your place for only a couple of minutes when the call from Zelda comes through.
I did as you told me, Mike.
And?
I've been on Gomez's trail from the time his car pulled out of that side street. Believe me, I wanted to go back to you after I heard those shots. Are you all right?
Yeah, but you could see that dummy. Where are you, Zelda?
I'm calling from a bar up in White Plains, a place called the Onyx. It's on Central Avenue.
Gomez goes straight there?
Mm-hmm. He's sitting in a booth in the rear. Keeps looking around as if he were expecting someone.
Okay, honey, I'm on my way up. You get in your coupe and go up the West Side Drive, cut into Central Avenue and stay on it until you get to the Onyx in White Plains. Zelda is to wait for you at the phone in the front part of the joint, but she isn't there. You're starting to get some black, unhappy thoughts about her when you spot her waving to you from a booth in the rear.
Oh, Mike, am I glad you're here. I thought you'd never get here.
What's wrong? What?
I didn't know what to do, Mike. It's an awful spot.
Matt, what are you talking about? What happened to Gomez? Where is he?
Well, that's what I'm talking about, Gomez.
Well, come on, where is he?
That's where I found him after I phoned you. I didn't know how it happened.
Well, will you make sense? What happened to Carlos Gomez? Where is he?
Just where I found him, here in the booth, under the table. What? Look for yourself, Mike. He's dead.
You look for yourself. Gomez is dead, all right. He's rolled up in a ball under the table, and the brown handle of a knife is sticking out between his shoulder blades.
Mike, what are we going to do?
There's only one thing for you and Zelda to do. Get out of there and fast. You can feel her trembling as you take her arm on the way out.
Oh, Mike, I never was so glad to see anybody in my life.
You tell her you're going to make her prove that later on when there's time.
I'm going with you. I've gone this far.
You tell her she's gone far enough. From here on, you're playing at the keep. After you put Zelda in her car and send her off, you drive over to Beckley's Roadhouse. Ted Beckley isn't any help to you this time. Dorothy Peters is conspicuously absent from the joint. You find out where she lives and go over to her place.
Yes? Oh, you.
The way she says that is intended to make you feel like you're the last guy on earth. It's the last guy she wants to see.
What do you want?
First, I want to thank you for lightening my evening.
I know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about that phone call you made to me before I left for my appointment with Gomez.
Phone call? Gomez? You're not making sense.
According to the switchboard record downstairs, I'm making a lot of sense. You made a call to my number. So the least I can do is to thank you for my life. I'm curious. Why did you bother?
Yeah, Dorothy, why did you bother? Go ahead in, Hammer. This time I'm inviting you.
I don't see how I can refuse your invitation, Beckley.
Well, I don't see how either. Well, it's engraved on this 45. Inside, both of you. But you weren't feeling well tonight, huh, Dorothy? Sick. So you couldn't come to work.
Ted,
you're going to be even sicker. I followed you here, Hammer.
Failing me has turned out to be a sort of a national sport.
I followed you because you gave me sort of a shock when you showed up at my place alive. You know what I mean?
I can guess.
Dorothy, he doesn't have to guess. She knows. Don't you, Dorothy?
Well, no.
Sure she does, Hammer. She knows I had you tapped for the same place I sent George Norton. I had it set up nice and neat. Carlos Gomez was going to put on another shooting session for me, just like he did on Norton. But somebody tripped up me and Gomez. And it's a good thing Gomez isn't alive to hear about it. He'd be awfully disappointed.
Gomez is dead?
Didn't break my heart.
I figured I didn't need him anymore. I had somebody pay him off at the Onyx Bar over in White Plains. Now to you, Dorothy. Somebody tipped Hammer off. That somebody was you.
Well, no, Ted, I wouldn't do anything like that. Besides, how would I know? You didn't tell me.
Nobody knew about the deal I had with Gomez except you.
But you didn't tell me, Ted.
That's right, I didn't.
Well, then how could I know?
I tried to figure out how Hammer got wise, and then I remembered. I remembered you were standing outside my office last night when Gomez walked out. You had your ear to the door. You heard what we said.
All right, Ted, I heard.
Well, I can say thanks again anyway, Dorothy. Why did you do it?
Why?
Martha Jordan.
What?
You wasn't a bad kid. You promised me, Ted, you wouldn't keep after her. You promised me as long as you kept the mouth closed about George Norton, you'd let her alone.
What was she to you?
Nothing, just a nice kid. Too nice to get what she ended up with.
What's the matter with you? Are you crazy? I set up a nice spot for us. I get Norton out of the way so the trouble's mine. Ours. And then you go pull a rotten, lousy trick like that.
I couldn't help it, Ted. You can't go on killing. I had to stop you somewhere. Just had to stop you.
No wonder you didn't call the cops.
I just wanted to stop you, that's all.
And she did, Beckley. Not yet, Hammer. There's still you. And her.
You won't get away so easy this time.
I'll take my chances. Now get over there with her. Go on, get over there.
You're over next to the dame. You can see she doesn't feel any way about it. But with you, it's different.
Like I said, I'll take my chances.
And you'll take yours. You don't know just how, but you do know you don't have much of a choice. But when the door buzzer starts to cough, you get an unexpected choice. Bickley takes his eyes off you for an instant, and in that instant, you take off with a flying leap head first. You hit him with all you've got, and the wind hisses out of him like gas escaping from a jet. He goes down and starts to roll on the floor like a lopsided apple. The gun is still in his head, and he can still make a lot of trouble for you. So you bend over him, and with the back of your hand, crack him right behind the ear. From then on, he's a sleeping rabbit. The buzzer is still sounding off. You go to the door and open it, and you find out the aren't finished for this evening yet.
Well, it took you long enough to answer.
Zelda glares at you like the schoolgirl that finds her boyfriend carving another kid's initials on a tree.
I followed you because I thought you might need me, and what happens? I find you in another woman's apartment.
You tell her you've never been so glad to see anybody in your life.
You're going to have a job proving that.
Everything is proven for you when you bring her in and show her back. On the way back to town, she tells you how sorry she is.
I'm so sorry for mistaking.
But the way things stack up, you're not a bit sorry. Because that final wall of resistance all that keeps between her and you starts to crumble into beautiful dust.
This is Andrea J. Graham, author of the Web Surfer series. Oh, and A Madam's Wife. You're listening to the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio.
Welcome back. Well, another typical hard-boiled mystery, and those were really kind of running out of style. There would, of course, be several more months of Mike Hammer episodes after this one. This one, I think, was fairly well-written. It's probably my second favorite of the Ted DeCorsia episodes, right behind Some Kind of Satisfaction. Though I definitely do prefer Larry Haynes. I thought he did a much better job, even though DeCorsia's voice is probably a closer natural match for Mike Hammer, who is definitely one of the harder-edged characters we've had on this podcast. Of course, next week we're going to be doing something different and taking a look at several different series with one episode each, and we'll be doing that for the next 4 weeks. All right, well, in a couple minutes, I will announce what new series we're going to do on Tuesday. But first, I want to talk about our next Patreon goal, which we're right at the doorstep on. As of this recording date, we are actually at $749, and that's $51 away from our goal of a server upgrade, which is at the $800 level. Now, those who've been listening to the show for a few months know we did our server upgrade recently out of, well, not really having any choice about it. However, we didn't get quite as nice a server as I would have otherwise liked. Now, on the server we did get, we are locked into a 1-year contract. I don't think it'll expire until next February or March. So we actually all have a couple of options if we hit that goal. And it was something that Jennifer Moss, who designed our website, suggested that there's a service that is a podcast host, and we could host the video portion of the podcast there and keep just the audio on our existing server. And that would probably really reduce the chance of having another server issue anytime in the near future. If we couldn't make that work, then we'll probably wait till February, March, and upgrade to an even better server, which should protect us for years to come. And I should say that if we do go with that other host, we shouldn't have to continually be taking videos down after a few weeks. as we do now to make sure that we don't have so many people watching and downloading videos like we did before that it takes the whole podcast down. So those are the options we're weighing, and once we hit that $800 level, we'll start taking the appropriate steps. All right, well, as to the series that we are going to bring you in our 2017-2018 season, we have two shows to announce, so let's go ahead and we'll play the intros for both of them.
Frank Sinatra, transcribed as Rocky Fortune. Frank Sinatra, who stars as that footloose and frequently unemployed young gentleman, Rocky Fortune.
Here is a story that will tax your powers of deduction. Perhaps you can assist us in solving the mystery which confronts officials of Trans-American Airlines. To aid us in the investigation, the United States Department of Justice has detailed Miss Irene Delroy, clever girl operative, to bring the guilty person or persons to justice. Now here is our problem. Within a period of 3 weeks, Trans-American has lost three of the newest type airmail ships in a very mysterious manner. In each case, the pilot, flying through night and bad weather, reported that the ship's motor cut out over mountainous country, forcing him to leave the ship by parachute. Upon locating the wreckage, officials of Trans-American found the mail apparently safe, but were astounded to hear that in each case, a valuable shipment of government securities was missing.
So, Rocky Fortune, and the other one is Airmail Mystery. Rocky Fortune, of course, will bring us Frank Sinatra, probably one of the bigger stars we've had on the Great Detectives of Old Time Radio, certainly on a recurring basis. We've had, you know, one shot with Humphrey Bogart. Airmail Mystery is one that I just found this past year, and actually prior to this year, there was only one episode of it in circulation, which is a challenge as it was a 13-part serialized mystery. Well, now there are 11 of the 13 parts in existence, and I think even with the two parts that are missing, the story still hangs together really well. And it's a good concept. It's one of the earliest programs we've ever played, and so I will be delighted to go ahead and bring that to you in 2018. Now, longtime listeners of the program will notice that we're not announcing nearly as many Tuesday programs as we typically do. And there's a reason for that. In addition to Rocky Fortune and Airmail Mystery, we have yet another batch of previously uncirculated episodes we're going to bring you during the season. There's a total of 14 episodes from three different series. So you add the number of episodes of Rocky Fortune, plus the number of episodes from Airmail Mystery, plus these lost episodes, and you arrive at 44 weeks. And given the experience with different lost episodes emerging over the past year, I'd kind of like to keep my options open a little bit. Obviously, Rocky Fortune was a series that I actually planned on bringing you at the end of this, towards the tail end of this current season. But we had so many different lost episodes come into circulation, it just hasn't worked out. So I'm being a little bit more open-ended about what we might bring you towards the tail end of our ninth season. So stay tuned, and we'll let you know more when our plans are a little more firm. But for next season, plan on Frank Sinatra in Rocky Fortune and for a really unique and interesting serialized mystery in Airmail Mystery, which will be coming to you shortly after we finish Rocky Fortune. Well, that will do it for today. If you do have a comment, email it to me, box13@greatdetectives.net. Follow us on Twitter at Radio Detectives and become one of our friends on Facebook, facebook.com/Radio Detectives. From Boise, Idaho, this is your host, Adam Graham, signing off.